welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and I would like to introduce our Syosset alum guest.
Hi, I'm Peter Steinberg. I grew up in Syosset. I moved to Syosset when I was 4, and my parents still live in the same house down Split Rock Road. And my profession is a literary agent. I work at a place called Foundry Literary and Media. And I've been a literary agent. I've been selling books. I sold my first book in 1999. So I've been selling books for a little over 20 years. And I remember the library fondly growing up. And it really influenced me to start loving reading and storytelling. And it's probably one of the reasons I have my profession today.
That's awesome. And have you been by since we've expanded?
I haven't. No, I have not been in the library in many years.
Well, you have an open invitation to come and check us out because we did a very big renovation around 2007. And we're always looking for just better ways to serve the community. And I also grew up here in Syosset. So I also have fond memories of the library, and it's always cool to speak to somebody else who came through the same system and grew up here. So if you don't mind me asking, what year did you graduate?
Graduate high school?
Yes.
1987.
Very cool. And what elementary school did you go to?
I went to Split Rock School, which no longer is there down Split Rock Road, and I can't remember around... mid-80s, they knocked it down for housing development.
So I have to say, this is awesome because you are our first former Split Rock student. I usually, when we ask this question, you know, people still go with the elementary schools that are still around. But Split Rock, I remember when I moved into the neighborhood, and I moved in around 84, I was also 4. Split Rock, I think Split Rock had just been closed, and you know there were rumors of the school that had closed. So it's cool to finally speak to somebody who came through there.
Yeah, I mean it was a great school, beautiful building, and
it really
they knocked it down. It's a shame. I mean, at the end of the day, the older I get, the more I realize everything's about real estate.
It's very true. It's absolutely true. And I'm trying to remember if TV Summers was an elementary school or a middle school. TV Summers is another defunct school in Syosset. And then there was Locust Grove, and that is currently Variety Early Education Center, which serves children with special needs. So that one
I remember Locust Grove. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one is still around. It is true. And if you do come to our local history department, we have lots of pictures of all of those schools, especially Split Rock, which, as you said, was a beautiful school. So
yeah, and they left the place where you would play baseball and in the back behind the school.
Right,
the field is still there, you know, behind the houses. So I once in a while I drive over there and walk around.
Yeah,
think about it.
Yeah, yeah. So after Split Rock, did you go to Southwoods or Thompson?
Southwoods.
Southwoods, me
too. Junior high, and
yes.
Then Syosset High School.
Very good. So throughout high school, was English, was literature your favorite class work?
It was up there. I mean, I have always loved storytelling and reading. I asked my sister about our childhood. She just remembers my door shut because I was just reading in there. You know, I was reading. I was a shy kid and just spent many, many years just reading, you know, and like living through the world through books. But I, you know, at that time in high school, I was also very much into filmmaking and movies. So at that moment in time and up until, you know, my mid-20s, I wanted to, you know, write screenplays and be a movie director. So during my high school years, I went to film camp. Like, I went to film camp at New York Institute of Technology. I was friends with James Gray, who just directed that movie Ad Astra with Brad Pitt. He was there. You know, I went to SVA for summer classes, things like that. So, and I ended up going to NYU Film School.
So that's really cool to hear, because believe it or not, I actually wanted to go into film as well. And, you know, what I ended up realizing was that stories were really what I liked about the whole industry in general. What I really just connected with in the film industry was stories. And that's kind of my path to becoming a librarian.
Neat.
Yeah. So, okay. So how did you end up becoming a literary agent, and what are some of your favorite things about the profession?
Yeah. I mean, I ended up going to NYU Film School for college. I wanted to direct movies. I was writing screenplays once. I did a thesis film, which is on YouTube. It's called The Kite Flies Out of Sight, if anyone wants to look at it. But I ended up, after college, my primary idea was I'll be a temp. I'll work as a temp so I don't get sucked into my day job, so I can write my screenplays. I ended up temping for about 2.5 years, at which point I started getting sick of being a temp, and I also was writing screenplays. At that time, I would write screenplays, I wasn't sure where to send them. I didn't know if they were any good. I didn't really have many contacts. And I ended up temping at HarperCollins just by chance. And I never thought of myself as someone who could work in an office. You know, that's why I wanted to, like, be on set of the movies. But I had always loved books, and I worked there, and I'd never really thought about, you know, how books are made or what's behind the scenes. I thought, you know, how many people do you need? You need the author, you need them to maybe figure out what the book jacket is, and then it's shipped to the stores. You know, little did I know, there's a whole world behind it, and working at HarperCollins sort of, like, gave me a peek into that world. So I was temping there. I temped there for about 6 months. That job ended, and I said, maybe I should look into this publishing thing. I sort of like it, and I was sort of sick of writing screenplays, and wasn't able to sort of support myself in that way. There was no opening. I wanted to be a book editor, not a book agent, but there were just no openings at the moment in time when I was looking. But there was an opening at a place called Donatio and Ashworth, which turned out to be a very famous, you know, literary agency, like a storied literary agency, and they needed an assistant, and I got the job. It was sort of like, you know, it was sort of a romantic version of what you think of a literary agency. There was, like, manuscripts piled everywhere. There was a cat in the office. Everyone was smoking and, you know, joking on the phone. And, you know, it was slightly pre-email.
Yes.
So I sort of, like, fell in love with that notion. I sort of basically said yes to the job because there was a cat in the office. And I was like, that's cool.
That would sell me, too.
Yeah.
What was your cat's name, the office cat?
God, I don't remember. I'm sorry, I don't remember. But he was like 20 years old, incredibly skinny.
Oh.
And the funny anecdote with that is that, oh, his name was Mr. P, which was ironic because, like, he would pee everywhere. But one of my jobs is sometimes he'd throw up hairballs on manuscripts, and I'd have to white it out.
Oh, wow.
Like, I'd white out hairballs on manuscripts. That's, and some of these people were famous writers.
That's quite a thing to put on your resume, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I did this, I did that. I also whited out some cat. Wow.
But it was an amazing place to work because, like, they represented Mario Puzo, wrote the Godfather books and many other books. They had done Joseph Heller's books. Edward Gorey, Peter Matheson, Robert Stone, Kathleen Shine. They had just sold Fight Club, you know, Chuck Palahniuk's book. So I got to interact with all these people. A lot of them were very elderly, you know, so, like, Mario Puzo passed away while I was working there, but I got to speak with him for a couple of years before he did. Same with Edward Gorey. He would send these gorgeous, like, he would send these envelopes back to the office with contracts and things, and gorgeous handwriting, beautiful things. Of course, I was very young, and I just threw them all away, which I regret.
Sometimes you just don't know.
Yeah.
But that's really an incredible place to cut your teeth in the industry.
Yeah, and it was just chance. Like, I didn't know, and I didn't even know what a literary agent was. You know, so it was just chance. And but it sort of spoke to me because just sort of people in publishing, if you're a book editor, you don't really interact with the movie side of things. But if you're a book agent, you do. And that's sort of I still was able to keep a toe in the water of the movie business, which was my education. So if we would sell a book, we would also work on the film rights as well.
So it was a perfect relationship almost.
Yeah, I sort of fell into the job by chance. People do not go to college to become a literary agent. If you talk to literary agents, they're always like, oh, yeah, I fell in for this reason or this by chance, or, you know, I knew someone who did it and I got the job as the assistant. It's fairly sort of a chance kind of thing. But it spoke to me, and I like doing it. I love talking to writers. I love being the writer's advocate. You know, I love sort of trying to get them the most money possible. I love giving them notes on their work. Things like that.
Sure. And, you know, we obviously we love writers and we love being able to sell their book through our recommendations. Even though, you know, I always say in a way libraries are non-retail, because you're kind of selling things, but you're really not, you know, it's that fine line. But, you know, we like to be advocates for writers and make sure that our patrons are aware of what's out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the company you work with now, Foundry Media, would you like to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's sort of a medium-sized literary agency in Manhattan. We're off of Union Square. There are a few medium-sized literary agencies. We're one of them. I think there's 12 or 13 agents here. I've worked here a little over 5 years. Big clients include Trevor Noah, you know, from The Daily Show.
We love him. Yes, that book was fantastic. Absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, we represented Ready Player One, Ernest Cline's book that became the Steven Spielberg film. I represent a book called You Are a Badass.
I know that book.
Has sold millions of copies, you know, things like that. So sort of, you know, those are sort of the ones that have done extraordinarily well for us, and we represent many, many, many others. The agency has been around, I think, about 13 years or so.
That's really cool. So back to Syosset. So do you have any favorite memories? Do you have a favorite bagel place?
My favorite bagel place is Bagel Master. It was there when we moved. I moved to Syosset in, I think, 1974, and it was there, you know, then.
Right.
And I remember before they remodeled it, I remember what it used to look like. And one funny anecdote of that is, in the 70s, there were no ATMs, so if you didn't have cash for the weekend, you were screwed. So, my mom used to go to Bagel Master. I remember this on Saturday mornings. She would drag me along as a little kid. She would give them a check, and they'd give her cash.
Really? So yeah. Bagel Master was the early ATM.
It was my mom's ATM. Yeah.
That's funny. And, you know, sometimes I wonder how we all survived without it, because at that time, you know, when I was a child, not everybody had a card, and ATMs didn't come around until I was in college, and I remember standing on this long line for the bank with my mother every few weeks to get cash, but I never would have thought of taking a check to Bagel Master.
It's pretty funny.
It's very inventive.
Yeah.
And good business for Bagel Master.
Right, and I was a little kid, and I didn't question it. I was like, oh, I guess this is what goes on.
Right. Of course. Well, they're still here, obviously, and you probably come in when you come to visit.
Absolutely, and that neon hot bagel thing is there. You know, has always been there, and I just look at it. I'm like, wow, that sign's been there a long time.
And I used to think that it was called Hot Bagels. I didn't realize that the place was called Bagel Master until much, much later in my life, because whenever we would pass it, it was called, you know, it said Hot Bagels. So when I'd say to my friends, oh, let's stop at Hot Bagels, I always kind of wondered why they were giving me that look.
Don't they claim that they invented the flat bagel? I don't know if that's true or not.
But. I have to go and look. I mean, I'm not sure if they actually did. It sounds like something I might have seen. I'll go check that out.
Yeah.
But the people who work there and the current owners are wonderful, wonderful people, and we've worked with them at the library for refreshments for programs. So we love Bagel Master, and their mini bagels are like the size of regular bagels. Which is cool, which is also not to say that you shouldn't buy a regular size bagel when you go to Bagel Master. But if you have a kid and you're not sure if your mini bagel is going to feed them, it is. So Bagel Master is great. What about diners? Did you have a favorite diner?
Yeah, I mean, there used to be a diner where the Dunkin' Donuts is next to the train station.
There was, and it was very good.
And I loved it. And my dad used to, like, my mom would work some nights, and my dad would take my sister and I to that diner, you know, like every Tuesday and Thursday or something for dinner. And we loved it. And there was, and also I remember Split Rock School. Once in a while I would go there for lunch at, you know, during school days. And the teachers would be there eating lunch as well from Split Rock School. And, you know, when you're a little kid and you see, like, teachers out of their environment, you're like, your mind is blown. You're like, wow, you're actually people.
Yes, absolutely. And I also remember in the heart of town, there was the Syosset Sweet Shop.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, which I am always very sad. I mean, I know it's been a long time since it's been gone, but, you know, local diners and local, because we had, I think at one point there was at least two Friendlies within the Syosset area.
Yeah, there was the Friendlies where the Greek place is. I think it's a Greek place now.
Yes,
yes. I used to go there all the time. And then there was also, I think there was a Baskin Robbins, in the little strip in Syosset there.
But there's too, also...
That I used to go to.
Yeah, there is currently a Friendlies off of Jericho Turnpike. I'm not sure if it was there when you were there. But the thing about Syosset Sweet Shop was... that it had that Friendlies feel, but it was local and it had our town name on it, and that was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
And every Friday night, my parents would take us to that restaurant, El Parral, which is still there, too.
Which is still there, yes, and very good. And we also had movie theaters in Syosset, which are...
That's right.
No longer around. So anyway...
I remember riding my bike from my parents to go see Tron on Jericho Turnpike.
Did you see it at the big theater?
I think it's an Equinox. Yeah, it's an Equinox now. Is
it
that right?
It is. So that's you know, those things that you remember when you go back. Mm-hmm. So anyway, is there anything, if there are Syosset alum listening to this, is there anything you'd like to tell anybody if they're interested in just getting into the literary field, or if you know what you would do?
I think people who end up working at agencies, a lot of them intern here,
right?
You know, so if you're interested, you know, you're just out of college, you're in college, you know, and are interested in going into publishing, interning is probably your best bet. You know, that's how you sort of get a sense. You get to know people, you get a sense of things. I mean, you have to have family support in terms of, like, you know, money in order to do it, or, you know, sometimes people intern twice a week and work at their jobs the other days. You know, there's sort of different ways to do it. But I think interning is sort of the standard way. There's also something called the Columbia Publishing Course, which I think is like a 6-week program, I think maybe in the summer, where you go and it's sort of like a crash course in publishing, which is another standard way people get into the business.
And for librarians and libraries, what do you as a literary agent feel our role is in helping both the publishing industry and authors, prospective authors and published authors?
Oh, I mean, I think you create generations of readers. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. Is like, you have to have a library in order to make a person fall in love with reading. And once they do fall in love with reading, they're readers for the rest of their lives. I mean, we all get busy as adults and sometimes don't have the time to read as much as we'd like. But that innate sense of, like, being transported by a book, you cannot beat that. Like, you know, if you think about your favorite novels and what they do to you and how you feel and how they change you. I mean, that happens in childhood where you start falling in love with that feeling and you sort of like want to read the rest of your life. So I think, you know, a lot of my job is hoping people will buy these books that I'm agenting when they're published. And, you know, it's because they love reading, you know, so I think about libraries in that sort of way.
Did you have a first book that helped you fall in love with reading?
My dad used to read me Treasure Island, and that by Robert Louis Stevenson.
Yes.
And that really, I like love that book so much. I really fell in love with it. And that was the first book that was read to me that I fell in love with. And then I as a kid, I was very much like I used to take out of the Sasset Library, like they had a, it was sort of like the poor man's Hardy Boys. It was a thing called The Three Investigators, which I read as a kid.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, you could look it up. It was sort of like the Hardy Boys. And I loved it. You know, I read all of them. It was like a series like the Hardy Boys, and I would take it out of the library there. They also had something called, I think I took this out of the library too, it was the Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Yes.
And they would have like these different stories that Alfred Hitchcock would present, and I would love those as well.
Yeah, those have, I believe we still have those in our collection, believe it or not. Those are really kind of cool. And I know when I pass them by, I have always found them to be a bit quirky, just that they exist. Especially we had them in the children's department, which as a child, I always found Alfred Hitchcock Presents when I'd watch it on Nick at Night to be really creepy. But, yeah, I think those are pretty cool. I know for me, and it's very funny because I always say I was a reluctant reader, but then I got into, I started reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which was my first fantasy
book.
Yeah,
I love that so much too.
I think children's fantasy has changed so much over the course of the last few years. I mean, you know, with Harry Potter, for instance, which is universally read by adults and children alike, I think things have really just changed.
But the more they change, the more they stay the same, in the sense that, like, J.K. Rowling, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure she loved the Narnia books as a kid. So they're influencing, you know, what people are reading now are influenced by the writers who read those things that we read then, you know? And I think that it's just sort of like one thing is handed down to the next thing.
Yeah, you know? No, that's absolutely true. And it's just, so it's so great because, you know, I spent 16 years in the children's department, and just to see all of these kids get excited about books and carry out mountains of books, and you still see them as teens and then adults. And, you know, we really serve families here. From the very beginning to, you know, senior citizens. And we try to do our best to just not foster the love of reading, foster the love of knowledge. And we're just so happy to see people from our community growing and so influenced by what we do.
Yes, it's so much about community. And, like, sounds like Syosset need it. They need a place where people can go.
Yes.
You know, and gather and talk about things. And you know, class disappears in libraries, which is the other thing that I love.
That's
you
true.
You know, like anyone can go, no matter, you know, where you stand on the economic ladder. It's just like, it's just sort of a very sort of democratic kind of ideal. And I love libraries.
Thank you so much for talking to us. And is there anything else you'd like to share before we close out?
Well, I just want to thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you. And I think I'm going to have to come to the library sometime soon.
Please, please, please do.
I'll look for you.
You're so welcome. Send me an email before you do. I'll
make sure
that we'll connect, and I'll introduce you to our director and all that fun stuff.
Okay, great.
All right. So once again, this is Jessica, and my guest was
Peter Steinberg.
And I'm going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.